Support for the Media Project comes from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a new Bachelor of Science degree in public health with a focus on social, physical, and behavioral sciences. strose.edu. From Northeast Public Radio, this is the Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
So this week we have the editor, the professor, and the columnist on the Media Project, which you haven't heard here before. I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union, here with my great pal, Dr. Alan Chartok, the CEO of Northeast Public Radio.
We are pals.
Pals, pals, I tell you. And in between us here, keeping us separated, should pals have any disagreements, Chris Churchill, the Metro columnist for the Times Union. Hey,
hello.
Don't usually see you outside the newsroom, you know. This is an
unusual context.
It
is a little odd.
Yeah, don't say anything bad.
He signs the check.
I'm on my best behavior.
Your best behavior. Hey, listen, Donald Trump finally got a newspaper to endorse him.
Oh, is that right?
Isn't that right?
I didn't get that news.
If you take the America's 100 largest newspapers, the endorsement total so far is 43 for Clinton, 3 for Gary Johnson, Libertarian, and 0 for Donald Trump. But Donald Trump did get the editorial endorsement of the St. Joseph, Missouri News Press.
No kidding.
Which was, I think, a real publicity coup for the St. Joseph, Missouri News Press because they're getting talked about all over the country, and they probably have never had that before.
Dog bites man.
Yes, exactly.
I mean, man bites dog.
That's an amazing thing. You know, we talked before on this show about how newspaper editorials tend not to really make a difference, except there is some research saying that when there is dog bites man, when there is a newspaper that goes...
Aberrant newspaper.
Like the Arizona Republic, which had never endorsed a Democrat endorsing Hillary, that sometimes can influence some voters. But one of the interesting things is the feedback, the pushback. There was a remarkable piece written by the woman who's the publisher of the Arizona Republic about the death threats, literally, that they've gotten out
there. I heard her talking on NPR about that. Hmm. Yes, that's right. But of course... when one considers the St. Joseph's, you know, endorsement, you have to figure in the idea that you should take an aspirin.
Sorry, St. Joseph's just had a little trouble there. Had a little trouble. We got it. What can you do? But the media, of course, Donald Trump says there's a global conspiracy, a media conspiracy.
That it's rigged.
It's rigged. And most notably, I think, was his threat to sue the New York Times for publishing the information about the women who alleged to have been sexually assaulted by him. But in journalism circles, there's a lot of chatter, happy chatter, about the response of the deputy counsel of the New York Times, David McCraw.
Who I think was a New Paul's College alumni. I'm pretty sure.
He was a UAlbany Law School graduate. I'm not sure if he was an alumnus.
Undergraduate, yeah.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. 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 So McCraw wrote a remarkable letter of the kind that you just dream of writing, I'm sure, if you're a lawyer saying, oh yeah, bring it on, big guy. And he's gotten applause. It went viral and he's gotten
He may get a Pulitzer for it.
Yes, it could be. But of course, the New York Times legal department is still waiting for a reply from Donald Trump because of the sense that there really was no libel there.
Well, you know, Rex, there are myths that come out of campaigns, and I've been following this rather closely, and I get tons of letters because we do shows around here about this very election. And one of the myths that keeps coming up, now we don't know if it's a myth, is that Donald Trump is running for president so that he can set up his own media empire and that this will be the bottom of it. Yeah.
Well, Trump TV launched last night, actually. I mean, it launched on his Facebook page, but...
On the night of the last debate, you say?
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's right. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he is branding something, at least, as Trump TV. So that did raise some eyebrows.
Yeah. Well, you know what? This is going to be very interesting because if, in fact, the Fox network is going to move just slightly to the left and the kids are going to take over the old man's business, that may mean leave a little vacuum for what Fox used to do, which is to attract all the ultra-right.
Yeah, I don't know about that. I mean, is there really a big enough? I mean, you would assume
look at what Fox has done. It's always been the number.
Yeah, but not to the. It's not like Breitbart TV, and that's kind of what I imagine that the Trump TV would be.
Isn't there a large enough niche though for that to be?
Maybe there is.
A market.
I don't know.
A lot of people said that Chris Wallace did a great job moderating the last debate, and if he is the grand man of Fox TV, maybe a lot of the Fox viewers who love Donald Trump are going to be really ticked off about that.
Yeah, you make a very good point. I was extraordinarily impressed on that third debate about the way that Chris Wallace did and how well he did in terms of his journalistic ability. And, of course, you know, when you have nobody else to blame, blame the moderator.
He's always been very good. Whenever he does interviews, I always find them to be very fair. And he's actually, I mean, he asked tough questions in that debate, too, I thought.
Well, of course, his father was Mike Wallace. Mm. And, you know, everybody has to live up to their old man in some way. And Mike Wallace had tremendous journalistic integrity. But Chris Wallace did take the money from Fox. And so my feeling has always been he took the money from Fox. He is Mike Wallace's son. He looks like Mike Wallace. But that in the end, he understands that he has to maintain his own integrity. It's so important to him.
You know, one of the interesting things that came out as a result of the debate moderation, we have unveiled the political leanings or the political affiliations, actually, of the moderators. Chris Wallace, it turns out, is an enrolled Democrat.
Interesting.
Lester Holt is an enrolled Republican in New York State. Yeah. And I don't think people would have expected that going into this. Certainly Donald Trump, who would have postulated NBC is to the left and Fox News to the right. I don't think he would have agreed with that.
Chris Wallace explains that pretty well, though. He lives in Washington, D.C., where being a registered Republican is somewhat like being a registered Republican in Albany, where it kind of excludes you from most of the real good races.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's a fair explanation.
Yeah.
But here's a good question. And Chris, this is actually good for you because you're a columnist and you may need to sort of articulate what the difference is between what you do and what the people who sit around you in the newsroom do. There is some sense that objective American journalism has taken a hit in this election campaign, that the nature of the kind of reporting that we tend to do in our news coverage has diminished as so many journalists have been rather horrified about Mr. Trump.
Yeah, you know, I hear from readers almost every day. Actually, more than every day. I hear from them constantly from Trump supporters who feel that the media has gone too far. The bias is too strong in this election. And I do understand what they're saying in the sense that when you look at the New York Times or you look at even the Wall Street Journal, you know, you're going to see four or five negative stories about Trump. And if you're expecting it to be 50-50, which I think is some people's view of objectivity, it hasn't been that way. But I think that's partly because Trump has just, there's just been so many things. I mean, he says something that's kind of offensive almost every day. And it's like the press is just covering what he's saying. But in the aggregate, there sure have been a lot more negative stories about Trump than about Hillary.
And the answer to that is that if you're a firefighter, you go to where the fire is. You don't send a tanker and a hook and ladder to a building that's not on fire. Donald Trump has actually made news, and I think it is appropriate for the press to be doing this. You know, I think if David Farenthold of the Washington Post doesn't win a Pulitzer Prize, then you'd have to say the Pulitzers are rigged.
Everything's rigged.
Just like the Emmy Awards, you know.
But, you know, one other thing about the negativity of the Trump coverage, in a typical presidential election, there are a number of very big voices on the Republican side who advocate in favor of the Republican candidate. This election is different in that a lot of the opinion writers on the right have also been hitting Trump or very much in the never Trump camp.
Point.
So he doesn't really have any defenders in the traditional media.
Yes, that's right.
Well, let me go to this business about the media being rigged, which is something he also believes.
Does he really, though? Because at the same time in that debate, he kept saying, you'll read it in all the papers. Whenever he had anything negative to say about Hillary.
He still says the media is rigged.
Oh, he does. He says
the media is rigged.
He says
the media is rigged.
The only thing Hillary Clinton has going for herself is the press. He says, without the press, she's zero. This is a conspiracy against you, the American people. And it's the media's fault, he says, quote unquote. So there you go.
Yeah, but what I'm trying to say here is that if the election is rigged, and if the media is rigged and he's going to be the president, what would a president do about institutions that are rigged? It's clear. He would change them.
Hmm.
I mean, If you have a press that's rigged, then you'll have to make new rules for the press. God help us if he wins in terms of the public radio stations of this country, which get some public funding. In the case of this radio station we're speaking to, could we make it? Yeah, we could make it. It would be hard, but we could make it. But I tell you, it would wipe out a lot of the radio stations, public radio stations in America, if he took the little bit of money that they get away from the federal government. So if you get a rigged institution, and then what would you do about elections that were rigged? Would you change that too? Would you change the media also? How would you do it? Those are the things that I find particularly scary about this guy.
Quite interesting that the allegations of rigging seem to only occur in minority and urban neighborhoods that tend to involve Democrats. There's no allegation of rigging in rural areas.
Hmm. Well, you know, he won't. We're assuming that he loses, right? He won't think anything.
I'm assuming nothing.
He thinks the polls are rigged when they're against him, but he doesn't apparently think they're rigged when they show him ahead.
Right. And the only poll that consistently shows him either ahead, I think the only one, there may be a couple more, but that show him ahead is the Rasmussen poll. And I've always said the best Republican poll that there is, because they are now saying he's tied when others are saying really respectable polls are showing Hillary ahead by 11 points or 12 points. The New York Times says he has only an 8% chance of winning this election.
Mm-hmm. Quite interesting. So Chris, do you feel as a columnist any compulsion that you ought to play a little more fair with the other side if you believe a certain way about something? How do you define how you approach an issue when you've got an opinion?
That's a great question. You know, I do try to be fair. I mean, I'm an opinion columnist, but I'm a nonpartisan. I like to think of myself as a nonpartisan opinion columnist. And I do like to hit both sides when there's something to be hit. And I get a lot of emails from people who are saying, oh, why aren't you writing more about WikiLeaks? Or why have you written several columns criticizing Trump, but not Hillary? And it's somewhat hard to explain, but I feel like in a lot of ways, the stuff that Trump has done that offend me are more visceral. They're easier to write columns about, right? I mean, it's very hard to write a column about the email server. It's just your people's eyes start glazing over in paragraph 3. You know, but Trump, when he says the stuff he said about Muslims or the Hispanic judge or, you know, the talk on the bus, I mean, that's kind of like hits you in the gut kind of stuff. And I think it's much easier to write a column about. And just the fact that it's easier, maybe it's taking the lazy approach. Maybe we should try to write more interesting columns about email servers and whatnot.
Well, it's interesting because the difference between, you know, Chris, who's only a columnist, and Rex, who is a newspaper editor and a columnist, and Alan, who is a columnist and runs radio stations and does all these other things, is that we don't have conflicting intellectual loyalties that Chris may not be burdened with. Do you ever think of that?
What are your conflicting loyalties? You mean?
Well, you run a newspaper, right?
Yeah.
And you're going to be known as the newspaper editor.
Yeah.
And if you express in your wonderful Saturday column, and it is a wonderful Saturday column, a view, but somebody's going to say, okay, well, let me extrapolate that to what the newspaper believes. So you have to be a little bit more careful.
Yes, that is correct.
Then Alan, well, I'm crazy, so it doesn't much matter, you know what I mean, because I say what I want, you know, anyway. Yeah. But yes, a more prudent person would say, all right, let's watch out in terms of the station as well as
that's
what
right.
I'm saying.
People will interpret things as being the views of WAMC, even though you try to make clear that's not the case. Chris has the freedom.
But I still get that. Well, you're just saying that because your boss has told you to say that.
Is that right?
Yeah, or that's the editorial page.
Here's interesting. The Times Union editorial board took a stance supporting the budget put forward by the mayor of Troy, which calls for a huge tax increase. 3 or 4 days later, Chris wrote a column saying, that's crazy. This tax increase is going to kill people. So, you know, that kind of gives a lie to the notion that people think that the newspaper controls what a columnist has to say.
One other thing. I talked about how each of us differ in terms of writing columns. I have to write 2 columns a week and, you know, do this other stuff. But each of us have to worry a good deal about coming up with another column. I mean, that's the one universal truth about everybody. I need another column. Now, you know, it's really too bad when people shut up. So, for example, state government, which Rex and I are particularly interested in, you are too, Chris. So Andrew Cuomo was always good for a column. He said things which made my blood boil, and I was able to write a column. Now, all of his best buddies are in the paddock waiting to be tried. And all of a sudden, there is less coming out of Andrew Cuomo's mouth than I have ever seen, you know, in my life. Uh-huh. Well, on the one hand, I feel, I mean, some lawyers say, shut up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Shut up. Whereas I feel, as a person who has been critical of Cuomo, you know, that's probably good. And on the other hand, I really severely resent it as a columnist because it gives me less to write about.
Well, if you're going to go by that, then we should all be hoping Donald Trump wins because there'll be columns galore.
Right.
And don't think there aren't people who feel that.
Absolutely. Great stories. You know,
at least until we end up in the re-education camp.
That's, right. That's exactly right.
He's going to be great copy no matter what he does next. You know, and yeah. I do think there will be a media empire, a niche media empire that will follow him. But I think he's going to find that he's not as interesting when he's just the head of a little media empire and a hotel company than when he's the Republican nominee. So he's not going to get as much attention.
Well, yeah. Not only that, but I think that Trump is going to find himself facing a lot of questions that would never have come out about his university, about other stuff, if he weren't a presidential candidate post-election. I think, you know, he's been going around saying Hillary Clinton should go to jail. I wouldn't be one bit surprised to see what happens to him at this stage.
Well, not for that reason. I don't think she's going to. But I think he's got legal problems coming
in
big time.
But don't you think those legal problems get exacerbated, including in the press? After all, this is the Media Project. Don't you think they get exacerbated by the fact that if he had only shut up and not run for president, he probably would have gotten away with what he's been getting away
with? Yeah, but I don't think there is going to be, I don't think it's vindictiveness. I don't think that the Clinton Justice Department is going to come after him just because he's been a jerk to her. I mean, I kind of have more confidence in the integrity. I have confidence in the integrity of the FBI, actually. I think James Comey, the FBI director, is Mr. Straight Arrow. And I mean, the questions now coming from Trump about his integrity in declining to prosecute Hillary suggests that they don't know much about Comey, actually.
If we had... First of all, I agree with you. Second of all, if we have take a look at history, and we took a look at people like Joe McCarthy and what he did, when he didn't get his way with people, they became objects of his communist witch hunts. And let me tell you right now, when he finally got to General of the Army, Dwight David Eisenhower, implying that he was soft on communists, I think that was his end.
Amazing.
You know, the interesting thing about what Trump does next, I think a lot of it depends on how close the election is. If he, assuming he doesn't win, if he loses in a narrow race, I think he does have a voice going forward. But if he gets blown out, I mean, you know, just I think a lot of people, he'll be discredited in a sense. I don't know that the Trump TV and whatever media thing he wants to do down the road, I don't know that it has nearly as much of an audience.
Well, you know, there is evidence that his business enterprises are seeing a drop-off. Business people are declining to buy Trump products who used to buy it. People are refusing to stay in Trump hotels. It's really, this is reported last week by a couple of media outlets. So that's a pretty interesting.
There's going to be a lot of anger if he gets blown out, especially if they lose the Senate or even the House, because, you know, a lot of Republicans going into this thought this was a very, very winnable election. And if he manages to just get slaughtered, you know, a lot of people are going to be like, you know, the guy's toxic. We need to turn away from that. He may always have that core, that core 15% or whatever it is. And maybe that's enough to sustain a network. Maybe it's not. But I think a lot depends on the margins.
I wanted to just add something else. The press, as Rex has put it editorially, has supported Hillary overwhelmingly. However, I think the press have some legitimate questions about Hillary. And those were raised early by Bernie Sanders and others, who is now very much. So I think we're going to have a little bit of press buyers, I don't want to say remorse, but press buyers beware. If Hillary gets elected, I think you'll find newspapers like the New York Times and others who have done some very critical reporting on Hillary and Bill, saying maybe a little extra oomph to buy back what they may consider some lost credibility.
Yeah, there probably will be a swing that way. And I think if you look at a lot of the editorials that have endorsed her, a lot of the endorsements for her, a lot of them are very tepid. I mean, they're endorsements, but only kind of, sort of.
I think the reporting on Hillary's been very tough, as a matter of fact. I think the right doesn't believe that, but if taken on their own, she would be in really tough shape if she weren't so overshadowed by all the negative coverage of Trump, because he's just given so much, as you say, so much material there. So we will see a lot of tough reporting on President-elect and then President Hillary Clinton if it comes to that. I think you're right. And I think the House of Representatives, if it's in Republican hands, as I said before, the House will move to impeach her on the grounds of claiming that she was in contempt of Congress for refusing to respond to some things while she was in this interim period here. There will be a continuing political war in this country, and it will provide a lot of interesting coverage, you know. Well, which is rather depressing to think of. Hey, a couple of insider notes. Succession in New York City newspapers. The New York Daily News editor has departed, Jim Rich, after only a year at the editorship. And the person taking over is a longtime veteran of the paper, Arthur Brown, Artie, as he's known to his people, who has been sort of the guts of the Daily News newsroom for many, many years, most recently for the last 7 or 8 years as the editorial page editor. Artie Brown, interestingly, is he's a guy who started out as a copy boy, went to law school, came back, became a reporter, and ran the newsroom as city editor. Here's the interesting thing about this. Does this have something to do with the fact that the Daily News fumbled the story of Donald Trump tax returns? That, like NBC News, the New York Daily News had those documents. Wow. That the New York Times published from Trump's tax returns, and the Daily News couldn't get it done.
Well, that's so interesting, Rex, because the Daily News, I get the news, the Post, the Times every day, and I look at them all. And I have the feeling the Daily News has been a much better, more interesting newspaper than it's been for a long, long time. So I was astounded. Now, you play inside baseball. You know all the actors in all of this, Rex. I don't. But I was amazed because I think, you know, the news has been a very much improved newspaper. Mm-hmm. So when they fired the editor, now I figured that could just be Zuckerman, the owner, looking down his cereal one day and saying, off with his head. I don't know.
Well, I think it's been better, too, which is why I wonder if it is specifically because of some mistake.
Some
like
fumbled
that.
Ball.
I love stories like that, though, because I always hear from people who think there's this big, grand media conspiracy where we have these stories 6 months out and we sit on them and wait for just the perfect moment to release them. When in reality, when newsrooms get these stories, sometimes there's a little bit of panic that takes over.
Yeah.
Oh my God, this is an election-changing story. I was in Southern Maine when Ted Cohen of the Portland Press Herald had the story about George W. Bush's DUI arrest, and his paper wouldn't publish it.
No kidding.
And he wanted to write it 5 months ahead of time, but they wouldn't publish it. They said it's not a story; it's old news. And it fell into the lap of one of the local TV reporters right in October and turned into an October surprise. And it may have impacted that election. I mean, obviously, Bush became president. But it was one of those situations where a small local paper got this big story and didn't really handle it.
And sometimes it's just that you can't quite handle it. Now, here is a moment of confession. You know, when Elliot Spitzer fell from power, it was as a result of reporting about him patronizing an expensive prostitute. That story was broken by the New York Times. The Times Union had a tip about that before that was published in the Times. I didn't know about it at the time, but we didn't have the staff to pick it up. The New York Times, over a weekend, put 24 journalists on that story broke the story over a weekend. By Sunday evening, they were ready to go with the story after the Friday tip. So that kind of thing does happen sometimes.
One more thing. We should have talked about it earlier. We don't have a lot of time now. We have no time. But the fact that Assange is being told his privileges are being cut off by
his internet privileges.
That,
yeah,
internet
cut off.
That he's sitting in will basically affect a lot of newspapers who have been getting these tweets. And
we'll see. Actually, well, we can come back to it next week because we'll see if it diminishes the power of WikiLeaks. Interesting. All right. Well, we'll get to some more issues next week. Chris Churchill's been here, Times Union columnist. Thanks, Chris.
It was very brave of you to come in here. And sit next
it was fun.
Dr. Alan Shartok, CEO of Northeast Public Radio, and I'm Rex Smith from the Times Union. Thanks for joining us on The Media Project.
Paperman meets such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk. Pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it. It's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press. Now, you remember Mrs. Sadie Smuggery. She wanted money to buy a new fur coat. To get insurance, she employed skullduggery. She up and cut her husband's only throat. She chopped him into fragments, she stuffed him in a trunk. She shipped it all back yonder to her uncle in Podunk. Now newspaper men meet such interesting people. It must have startled poor old Sadie's unk. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, city desk. Hold the press, extra, extra, read all about it. It's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspaper men meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you, Christ.